Okay, Chris Johnson here again with another module. This is going to be a market overview. When I say market overview, I mean an overview of different ways to market your shows and get the gigs. This is not going to be all-inclusive. It's going to be the things that I have either known about or have done myself or have heard other people doing. And I'm not going to go in depth. This is just like an overview. And then in other modules, plus the original course, we're going to go over a lot of these ideas in great detail. If I do not go into great detail over some of these ideas presented here, it's because I don't use them or haven't used them or haven't found much success with them, and therefore don't have anything of value to contribute to your knowledge. I'm not going to talk knowledgeable about things that I haven't used and or haven't worked for me, because that's I find that to be disingenuous. So let's get into this. The ways that I know of to book gigs are search engine optimization with your website, Google Ads for your website, direct mail, showcases, referrals, agents, casual mentions, receipt blurbs, which I'll explain what that means in a second, signage at your shows, a 300-day later email, cold emails, and past client emails. So I'm going to get into a little bit of detail about what each one of these are, and then, like I said, in future modules, I'll be going over these more in depth. So, okay, SEO. SEO is search engine optimization. That is essentially using keywords and effective web copy and sound modern business practices to get your website to the top of Google search engine results. I've got an entire module already recorded on this. It's about 40 minutes long. It goes into quite a bit of detail and gives you some great ideas with things you can do to things that you can do to boost your SEO on your website. This also precludes that you have a good website. Google Ads is similar in that people are searching for your product or services, and they see your ads in Google search results. But in this case, you're paying Google a certain amount of money to be a place at the top of the search results. And the good news about Google Ads is you don't pay for anything until somebody clicks on your ad. So in other words, if somebody sees your ad but they don't click on it, you don't pay for anything. And it's pretty cool. I mean, I like Google Ads quite a bit. There are a lot of nuances about Google Ads and doing them correctly, and I've got an entire module planned for this course. And it's not going to be an audio one. It's going to be a video that I'm going to record. I'm going to go into one of my clients' accounts and kind of give you a tour and give you some really good insights about Google Ads, what you want to be aware of, what you want to be careful you don't fall prey to with Google, because Google is out to make your is out to take your money. So I'm going to give you some. It's not going to be an entire from A to Z in-depth training of Google Ads, because Google Ads, it takes a long time, really, to teach somebody how to do Google Ads properly. And Google is constantly changing their algorithms, they're changing everything. So I'm going to hit a lot of the high points and let you know what you need to be aware of in order to prevent Google from really just emptying your wallet, and some best practices and some cool little techniques that Google, they make it apparent, but they don't actually push really hard. It's like one of those hidden gems. And like I said, I'm talking about this cryptically, but we'll get into that in more depth later on in another module. Direct mail. Now, if you listen to a lot of digital marketers, and especially those who talk about the wonder and joy of social media, they would have you believe that direct mail is dead. They are 100% wrong. Direct mail is still thriving. I know several, especially in the entertainment industry, I know several school assembly presenters to this day who still use direct mail to book themselves thousands of dollars worth of gigs every year. So direct mail is fantastic. Now, direct mail can take the form of several different forms. You can. When I started using direct mail, I was using primarily long-form sales letters, 8-page sales letters, 4 pages printed front and back, put it into a regular business size envelope, and mailed to the live stamp. Very simple. It's all just text-based, too. And then the direct mail piece would direct people to my website or to call me or to email me or whatever I wanted to do with that. And again, the best source for my input on direct mail really is going to be in the original course, because I went in depth in the direct mail, the psychology of it and everything. And as I was looking through it, preparing for this update, I like what I wrote. And, you know, direct mail, the fundamentals have not changed. Direct mail is still very valid. So look to the main course for direct mail. But I will say, in addition to everything that I've talked about here today, you know, the long form sales letters and everything in the training material and the original course material, you don't have to just do a long form sales letter. You can also do a short form sales letter, just a 1 or 2 page letter, which I also talk about in the original course in the text version. And you can also mail other things. You can mail colorful postcards. You can do mailers, 8x11 mailers that are folded in half, and you can send those too. And just to give you some ideas of what you want to send for your mailers and give you an idea of you know, good graphic design and things like that, I'm going to include a few examples of mailers I've used in the past with this course. But a bit of warning. If you're going to mail an 8x11 flyer folded in half, you have to seal it on all three sides. Because when you take an 8x11 flyer, you fold it in half, you're going to have three sides that are open. So you have to use stickers. You can't use staples. You have to use these little round stickers, these clear stickers, and seal all three sides. If you don't, then the post office is not going to be able to mail them. They're going to send them back to you, not mailed, and you're going to be losing all of your hard-earned money on that on your postage. So you be aware of that. So I no longer send those big mailers. I only send like either 6x9 or I think it's 4x6, the smaller ones. I forget which ones. So I only send postcards now where I don't have to fold anything in half. But I did include those. I did want to include those flyers as an example of the kind of, you know, things to look for in terms of graphic design, headlines, some basic examples of copywriting, that kind of thing. You can learn a lot by looking at what I've included here. And they worked really well for me in the past. I mean, they really did. Yes, check those out too. Now, showcases. I've only done a couple of these. There's larger showcases and smaller showcases. The one that I did a 3 or 4 times and I got nothing out of it was it was a local one in my home county where I live, Niagara Falls in Niagara County. And it was like in one evening, you're there for like a few hours and you pay, I think I paid like whatever it was, 30, 40 bucks for a table. And you go in, you put your stuff on your table, you put your brochures, maybe a couple of magic props. And the object is to be there, be visible, and you put stuff into people's hands. And the PTA members are invited from several schools in the county. And you know, they come to this event, and you may see a lot of fundraisers, a lot of fundraising companies that sell gift wrap and cookies and chocolate, that kind of thing. A lot of fundraisers have their tables there, trying to catch the attention of the PTA to raise money. And truthfully, a lot of those companies do a lot of good business, and which is kind of a bummer because it makes it harder for guys like me to get noticed. Because most PTAs, they go there and they're looking to raise money for their PTA. They're, most of the time when they go to these events, at least in my experience, they're not really there looking for assembly presenters. They're really there looking for fundraising opportunities and things like that. So I did these little mini showcases, maybe 3 or 4 times. I didn't get anything out of it. I did one larger showcase, and the way the larger showcase works is I got invited to it, and the way that worked is you have your table, you have your materials, and then you're also invited to perform too. So I wound up giving away a 45-minute show to you know, certain classes at a school. They came in, like there's a guy before me who did a show, a guy after me who did a show, and it's literally a showcase. It's an opportunity to show representatives and kids from different schools what you're all about. And it was a weird experience, and I didn't get anything out of it. In fact, I don't think anybody did. So I've heard of other presenters doing really well with showcases for things like library, and I've done really well with library showcases as well. Thus far, I've not done really well with school showcases, and I'm not really sure why. So I'm not an expert on those, but I did want to mention them. Referrals. This is pretty easy. Referrals are, as the name would imply, other schools and past clients recommending you to other schools. And that's like one of those powerful ways to get schools, because if one school recommends you, the other schools will be more likely to pay attention. And what's great about referrals is you can set up locked bookings. So if you have school, let's say you have school A, who saw your show, loves your show, they want to bring you back. So they hire you, we'll say in October, and they love your show and they want to bring you back, we'll say 6 months later, and whatever, May. So then they recommend you to another school. That school books you. The first school books you. Now you've got two shows. And if you have to travel any distance, now you've doubled your profit without having to add any more miles to your car. Because the school that refers you and the school that books you off that referral, they're going to be from the same district. They're going to be close together. So it's going to be negligible miles. That's really briefly about referrals. Agents. Okay, I have a love-hate relationship with agents. I've had good agents, I've had bad agents. The first agent I had was a very nice lady who had a small balloon delivery business in Pittsburgh. She's very nice, and she booked me out for a fair amount of gigs for a few years at very low dollars, like $75 a gig. This was back in the late 90s. I mean, I was technically a professional magician, but I wasn't very good. Most of those $75 shows I was doing, I was overpaid. but for whatever reason, people liked what they saw. I mean, maybe they just liked the bark, and I don't know, and I got a lot of gigs off of her. Never got any school shows off of her. Then I moved from Pittsburgh to Niagara Falls, where I live now, and I found myself a couple of agents. And most of the agents that I, at this very base level, they're agencies in the aspect that they have a party planning business, like a balloon thing, or an actual storefront where they sell like wedding invitations and sort of things like that. And because of the nature of their business, they're often asked, can you recommend entertainment to me? So a lot of them will either do the entertainment themselves very poorly, or they will have a list of entertainers I can recommend, and the entertainers are then hired out by the agency, very minor agent, I should call it, and they collect a commission. These are usually low-dollar gigs as well, at least in my experience. Again, I was doing like $75 shows for a while, and then I got all the way up to $125 for some of the agents. And it's usually private parties, but once in a great while, I'd get a school, and I'd be able to get the whopping sum of $250. But it was nice because it gave me some experience doing schools, even though the money wasn't very good. So that was a certain level of agent. And then there's the next tier up. I'd been very well established as a hypnotist for high school kids. And my website, I don't have it up now because I quit doing a lot of high school shows for reasons that will take too long to explain on this audio. But I developed a good reputation as doing high school hypnosis shows and post-prom parties. So an agency from Florida they were looking for more entertainers for their agency, and they hired me. They found me online and hired me, and we just had like an hour-long conversation about my experience and insurance and do's and do not do's and that sort of thing, and we wound up working together. And she would send me it was anywhere from 12 to 18 shows a year she'd send me from New York to Iowa, Nebraska. Even though she was based in Florida, for whatever reason, she just had a good clientele built up in Iowa, Nebraska. So I was constantly on a plane. And I eventually raised my prices and then finally just told her I just didn't want to do the gigs anymore because I didn't want to fly anymore. Because every time I got into a plane, I got sick. It's just how it worked out. So now that was that got me a lot of high school gigs. She never got me any daytime assemblies. And then the next agency that I got hooked up with was Academic Entertainment. And they are, as the name implies, they're an agency which I believe all they do is they do educational programs in schools. And I believe they work K through 12. I got a fair amount of gigs from them. In my experience, they always tried to beat me up on price. To give you context, my fees for me to go to Niagara Falls to New Jersey, which is where I worked a lot before the pandemic, and now I don't go out there anymore because I just don't want to. But when I was going out to New Jersey all the time, my rates were before the pandemic, my rate was $1,300 for a couple of shows, two shows in one school. And after the pandemic, for me to go out, travel a similar distance, which is 7 hours in one direction, now it's $1,700 for two shows at the same building back to back. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. What this agency would do is they would try to do a lot of block booking. Like they say, well, if we get you like four schools over the course of 2 days, can you do each school for $800? And the challenge with that, I mean, it sounds good on paper because the agency is getting you work, but when you look at the numbers that I gave, and again, my numbers are going to be different from your numbers, but just for context, the arrangement they wanted was I was going to get paid 50% for each school. You know, because again, my rates are now $1,700 for one school. That's all inclusive pricing. But you know, this is, again, this is before the pandemic. My rates are a little bit lower, again, around $1,300 for one school. So thinking, hoping that this agency would turn out to be a watershed and get me a lot of bookings. I know people who work with this particular agency, and they get a ton of gigs. I mean, you know, 100 or more gigs a year from them for very good money. And for whatever reason, that was never extended to me. You know, they would say to me, "Well, we've got this date in Jersey, and we want you to do it for $800. And then if we get more gigs around it, you know, we'll fill that in, and you'll wind up going out to Jersey for 3 or 4 days and all these gigs." And I fell for it like once or twice. And then what would always happen is it would fall through. I would go out to Jersey for $800. And when you're talking about a 14-hour round trip, plus hotels, plus gas, plus wear and tear in your car, plus food, wasn't, you know, for 2 whole days, I wasn't profiting all that much, because it kills one day to drive out. You do your show the following morning, then the rest of the time you're driving back home. So it kills 2 full days. So $800, you know, it was $400 a day, and then my expenses come off of that. So I was probably getting like around $250, $300 a day. It wasn't very good. So after that happened a few times, I basically just pulled myself back from the agency, and I really don't work for them anymore. Now, I'm not saying not to work with agencies. I'm simply saying that don't do what I did. The agency will, the way Academic Entertainment would work, they would contact me and say, "Hey, we have this date. We want you to do this X," you know, and I had a certain amount of shows that they would do. You know, they would hire me typically for my science show, my recycling show, and occasionally for my, I don't have it anymore, but my American history show. Yeah, those are the 3 shows they booked me for reasons that will take too long to explain in this audio. So they say, "Okay, on March 2nd, we have this location," and they'd say whatever the location was, "and it's going to pay this much, and we want you to do two science shows." And I could either accept it or turn it away. You know, they would just there's no negotiation. It was just, "Here's the price," and you know, my price would be X amount of dollars, and then, of course, their price will, you know, their agency fee will go on top of that, which I didn't have a problem with. But there's no negotiation. So I just accepted it. And then eventually I got smart about it after talking to a few other people, and they say, "Well, no, you just tell them, you know, you're only going to do it for this amount of money." So I started doing that. I started telling the agency, "Look, for me to go out there, I have to make X amount of dollars." And I, before the pandemic hit, I got a couple of gigs out of them for the prices that I wanted, and it kind of worked out okay. So you learn from my mistakes. When they first started contacting me, I just took whatever they served me. But if an agency contacts you and the money is not to your liking, don't do it just to get your foot in the door, because you'll wind up regretting it. You'll wind up turning away gigs that could have been better paying jobs, especially when you get really rolling in the school market. There are certain times of the year where if you were able to be in 3 places at once, you could do 60, 70 shows a month. I mean, really. So don't, if the agency is not willing to give you the money that you want, then don't take it. And that's the way I look at it. Now, a separate way of looking at agencies is that because the agency is getting you the gig, you don't have to do any marketing expenses. You don't have to do anything. All you have to do is just block the date off in your calendar, show up and do the gig. So the agency, it's worth paying the agency a certain amount of money. And I agree with that. If an agency contacted me and they were going to give me, for me to go to New Jersey right now, so a 7-hour one-way trip, 14 hours round trip. If they were to contact me and they would say, "Well, we can't get you your $1,700, but we can get you your $1,400 or $1,500," I'd probably say yes, because you know, I always account for a chunk of my money being in, like, you know, marketing expenses, whether it's my time and effort to keep my site optimized, or when I was running Google Ads or direct mail or what have you. I mean, getting the gig is the biggest challenge. So I'm okay with getting the agency whatever they, you know, and a lot of agencies will add on top of that. Like if you're getting, like, say, we'll say $1,000 for a school show, the agency might get $2,000 and pay you your $1,000. I would not be concerned about that. If you set your prices with the agency and you're happy with those prices, and then it shouldn't matter what the agency gets. And that's my philosophy. I'm not opposed to working with agents, but I don't want agencies to lowball me. I'm okay with giving them, you know, whatever, 20, 25% off of my regular fee, because it saves me the time and expense of booking the gig. That's just my own personal philosophy. You can set it up however you want, but I've been doing this long enough. I've got enough gigs coming in that I don't have to discount my fees for anybody, and that's where I'm at right now. Okay, so that's agencies. Receipt blurbs. I started doing this about 6 years ago, and I'm amazed at how it works. It works better with my library clients, but it still works for school clients too. Whenever I send out an invoice to the school, it'll list all the information, the name of the school, the date, my contact, their contact information, the time of the shows, which show I'm doing, the fee, all those pertinent details. It lists my mailing address on it in case they're going to mail me my check. And then at the bottom, it'll say, thank you, be sure to check out my other shows. And I'll just include literally the logos of my other shows with the title of the show below it, and then like 4 or 5 words about that show, just like these quick, fast little blurbs. And then I'll do the same thing for receipts. When the school has booked me and they paid me and I sent out their receipt, at the bottom of the receipt, same thing. They'll see those 6 or 7 blurbs about my other shows, and that will sometimes net me another gig. Not a lot, but it's free money. I mean, really, especially if you're emailing your receipts and your invoices like I do, you're not burning up any more paper. You're not, all you're doing is literally just including a little bit of additional information. So consider that as well, receipt blurbs and invoice blurbs. Next, we get down to casual mentions. Casual mentions are something that is scripted into your delivery of your program, to the point where you're not doing a commercial, but you're just mentioning off the cuff. It should be scripted very casually, hence the name, casual mentions, that you have these other shows. Like, for instance, when I'm doing my character education show, I talk a little bit about, I do a whole test-taking segment, and I give the older kids a strategy for increasing their test scores, and teachers love this, by the way. Then I wrap this around the context of learning a magic trick. And I say, people ask me all the time how I learned magic. And the truth is, I learned most of my magic by reading. That's a whole separate show. And then I go on to the script. So I just mentioned casually during my character ed show, hey, I also do a reading show. And I do this in my control closing too. And the control closing script is elsewhere in this program. But when I do the control closing, I find a reason to mention that I do other shows. I'll say something along the lines of, I'd love to come back and see you guys. I've got 7 other shows, a different magic and different messages, but now it's up to you. And then I continue on to the control closing. So right there, that couple lines of dialogue, scripting, I've just mentioned the fact that I've got other shows. And it works. I mean, I'll have my clients come up to me after the show and they go, oh, what other shows do you offer? Because very often, they were just tasked with their school or their PTA to find a show on a given topic. Like, hey, we want a science show. Go find a science show. And because my site is highly optimized, then they will find my science show page, and we work together. And then even though they're on my website, they never go any further than my science show page, so they are shocked to discover that I have other shows. It sounds ridiculous, but that's what happens sometimes. So casual mentions can get you gigs too. You can also do this for your non-school shows too. If you're doing a birthday show or a library show, find a way to mention your other shows during during the scripted portions of your program. You can have I do a thing where I have like more show signage, and my sound system, and I'll get into sound systems another module, but my sound system is a Bose L1, and it's got a single tower where the speaker is elevated high enough to go over, so the sound washes over the audience. And what I did was I took a couple of pieces of Velcro and I put it on this tower, and then I had a what is the measurements? It's about an 18. What was the measurements? I'm going to say it's about 16 by 30 banner, and I had it printed up at GotPrint. Had my graphic guy design it. Got it printed up at GotPrint. I think it was for around $15. Very nicely designed banner, and all it says is 12 shows to choose from. It's got my logo and my website. And it just very quickly mentions I've got other shows. That's off to the side, and if teachers are coming in, and if they're members of the PTA for another school, because that happens a lot. Teachers will work at one school, and they'll be PTA members at another school, because they've got one kid in 5th grade at one school, another kid in 8th grade at another school, or whatever the case may be. They see a lot of crossover. And then the principal will see it. Oh, what other shows do you offer? It's a great sign. Now, to hold the, to keep that sign rigid, and what I did is I took this banner, and again, it's like banner material, so it holds up really well. And I wanted to hang it with that Velcro on my tower. So what I did is I went to the craft store. I got two, they're not wooden dowels. They're like flat pieces of wood, like balsa wood. And it measured about, I think it was balsa wood that measured 1 inch wide by about 1/4 inch thick. And I got a piece that was like whatever, 4 feet long. So I took a 15-inch piece, you know, I sawed it off, I took a 15-inch piece, two 15-inch pieces, put some wood glue on it, and pasted it to the back of the banner on the top and at the bottom. So now my top of the banner would remain rigid, the bottom of the banner would remain rigid, and then all I have to do is roll it up, and it will go in my Leffler table, get to my gig, unroll it, got some Velcro on the back of the balsa wood, stick it to my sound system, bang, a very quick, easy way to advertise you've got other shows. Okay, the 300-day later email, and I'm going to do an entire module on email marketing, but very quickly, the idea of the 300-day later email is if you have automated software that allows you to send out emails without you having to do it, we call them autoresponders. You can, when somebody contacts you via your contact form, you can have it set up that after 300 days after that initial contact, they get another email from you saying, hey, last year you reached out for information. I just want to remind you of the kind of programs I offer for you for this year. And the reason why it's 300 days later is because that 300-day later email is going to hit about 2 months before they contacted you. And so it's like just before they start looking for entertainers, assuming they start looking for entertainers the same time every year. It's really great psychology, and I'm going to credit that. I learned about it through Joe Romano, who's a really great assembly presenter in his own regard. So that's that. The 300-day later email is a fantastic one. You can also send out cold emails. Now, cold emails, we're in a little bit of a gray area here, where if you send out cold emails to like parents, you know, birthday moms, like somehow you get a list of moms, dads, and guardians who have children of a certain age, and you start sending out emails to them, that's technically spam because it's a whole privacy thing. But if you send out cold emails to principals, because their email addresses are typically on the school's website, they're a public figure. Now, it's not really spam, especially because many schools are looking for a school assembly presenters. So it's not, you're not approaching them trying to sell them as something they've never heard of or would never fathom they'd ever want. So it's not really spam, and it goes over. You get a decent return on cold emails. Not spectacular, because it's so cheap to send out cold emails. It doesn't cost you hardly anything. So cold emails. And then we also have past client emails. If you've got a list of past clients who've booked you, school clients especially, if you're not mailing them again and again, then you're leaving money on the table, because it's much harder to book a new client than it is to sell to sell your show to a past client. A lot of my schools are repeat schools from past years. Just today, as I'm recording this, I'm driving home from a library. I've been doing this library, 5 or 6 years at least. And that's not a long time. I know a lot of library performers who have been working in the same libraries far longer than that. They'll do the same clients, the same libraries, 20, 30 years. Libraries tend to be very loyal clients, but so do some schools as well. I've been to some schools multiple times. So you keep your email lists up to date and mail out your emails to your past clients. You can also do the same thing. I mentioned direct mail earlier. You can send out direct mail to your past clients as well. And when I get into in the written material in the previous version of the course, the older version of the course, I talked about when to send out your direct mail, and it applies as well for emails. But I'll get more in detail with email marketing in a completely separate module. But I just wanted to use this particular module as a way to give like a brief overview of several ways that you can use to get work from in the school market. So now we'll move on to another module.